Picture a 3-year-old girl standing before an enormous wooden box that barely fit through the doorway of her family's cramped Beijing apartment. The piano sat like a forbidden shrine in a space where 7 people shared just 2 rooms and 1 toilet with 11 families. She watched her mother dust it religiously each morning, adorning it with paper flowers like an ancestral altar, yet never playing a single note. Why keep such a monster if it remained forever silent? The answer was dangerous. In Mao's China of the 1950s, owning a piano meant carrying the stain of bad class background, a permanent mark against families who had once embraced Western culture. Zhu Xiaomei's grandfathers had built fortunes in furniture manufacturing and import-export, immersing themselves in European arts. Now, that heritage could destroy them. Her father remained unemployed, emotionally distant, following strict Confucian principles that demanded absolute obedience. Her mother supported the family, teaching music, while hiding her own bourgeois education. Everything shifted one stormy evening when her mother finally sat at the piano and played Schumann's Reverie. The gentle notes awakened something profound in the child, perhaps inherited memory, perhaps universal truth. She knew immediately she wanted to master this singing creature. Her mother's teaching method made music magical. Each note represented a family member, transforming abstract theory into living relationships. Under her father's harsh discipline, only piano playing brought peace. Perhaps the music reminded him of his parents' better life before revolution consumed everything. At 14, Zhu Xiaomei prepared for her first major recital, Beethoven's Pathétique, Mozart's Concerto No. 23, Chopin's Etudes. Then one night on the conservatory roof, she joked to classmates, "And what if I jumped?" Those 6 words destroyed everything. The watchman reported her for attempting suicide, a grave political offense suggesting rebellion against communism. Investigators discovered a diary passage about Anna Karenina's suicide, perfect evidence of bourgeois corruption. She was forced to write a self-criticism denouncing her background, her Western literature, her dangerous individualism. Standing in the auditorium where she should have performed, she read this confession before the entire conservatory. Professor Pan told her coldly, "I do not want to teach you anymore." At 14, she received a virtual life sentence. No university, no job prospects, no future. Classmates avoided her. She nearly starved until one brave student secretly left food on her desk. What she didn't know, her suicide attempt had been mentioned in a letter to Chairman Mao himself. In June 1966, violence consumed the conservatory. Red Guards, their own students, beat professors with belt buckles on the running track until they bled. After each forced confession, everyone shouted, "He is guilty! Long live Mao and the revolution!" Several renowned musicians chose suicide over endless torture. Piano teachers Gu Shengying and Li Kuizhen took their lives, as did Mama Zheng after brutal interrogation. Zhu's schoolmate Kun Qi was savagely beaten after being falsely accused of possessing weapons. The conservatory without music now allowed only Madame Mao's approved revolutionary works. Terrified, Zhu and her mother hid their piano under blankets, with a poster declaring it acquired by exploiting the people. Red Guards roamed streets quizzing people on the Little Red Book. Zhu witnessed a young man beaten in a Beijing stadium for suggesting one could be revolutionary despite bad class parents. He was later executed. By 1969, her family scattered. Her father went to a labor camp, accused of espionage. Zhu received orders for Camp 4619 in northern Hebei province. On departure day, her mother packed practical items. Chinese custom forbids sentimental goodbyes. Walking away, Zhu turned to see her mother staring palely into space, now left with only one daughter at home. For 5 brutal years, Zhu endured relentless labor in rice fields and ditches, followed by mandatory self-criticism sessions where prisoners denounced each other for early release. In 1971, transferred to Diu prison, Zhu became obsessed with Rachmaninoff's Second Concerto. Despite warnings it was madness, she arranged for her piano to be sent from Beijing. After desperate letters, her mother relented. 3 anxious weeks later, it arrived, blackened from coal, missing 20 strings, but intact. When a simpler commander arrived, she convinced him to let prisoners practice revolutionary music. She brought her piano into camp, finding a soundproof room where she practiced after stealing coal for heat. The real miracle came when a friend's father in Hong Kong sent forbidden scores: Bach, Chopin, Beethoven, Rachmaninoff. Zhu painstakingly copied them onto precious music paper. The refrigerator room became her sanctuary, where she played whatever she wanted, feeling weightless, completely detached from purpose. In that frozen prison, music revived their humanity. After fighting bureaucratic age limits to enter the conservatory, Zhu secured permission to study in America. Her father's final words as she departed in 1980, "Stay in America. Don't come back. There is no justice here." America overwhelmed her. The waste, superficial conversations, money obsession. In Boston, Gabriel Chodos taught her that deep musical knowledge comes from exhaustive exploration of a single piece, discovering the universal in the particular. His crucial lesson: complete respect for the score and total engagement, drawing energy from the stomach to develop orchestral tone. Her father wrote, revealing he'd found peace through Tibetan Buddhist texts, having begun to comprehend the secret of the Tao. Despite his difficult life, he'd discovered inner serenity and encouraged her to explore Chinese philosophy. This transformed her approach. She studied ancient texts, discovering she could play pieces attentively until she naturally loved each passage. Like Zhuangzi's dexterous butcher, who transcended technique to find Tao, she approached her piano as an eternal friend rather than something to struggle with. She discovered Chinese culture in Bach's work, as though he were a reincarnated Chinese sage. His counterpoint reminded her of calligraphy, breathing, meditation. The Goldberg variations became her salvation, containing courage, joy, soothing, dancing, tears. The final return of the aria after 30 variations perfectly illustrated Laozi's teaching: returning is the movement of the Tao. The Cultural Revolution left permanent scars. Each morning, Zhu wonders how to continue living, carrying perpetual fear and inability to trust. Worst of all, she cannot forget becoming a perpetrator, criticizing others, investigating their pasts, participating in collective destruction. 5 years ago in Paris, she reunited with Shawa, whom she had informed on. After Shawa's concert, Zhu begged forgiveness. Shawa smiled tenderly. "You've already been forgiven 1,000 times over. We were so young. We are all victims of the revolution." In 2003, cancer diagnosis brought odd relief. Facing 3 years to live, she realized what she still wanted: play the entire piano repertoire, record Beethoven and Schubert's final sonatas, complete Bach's Well-Tempered Clavier. After difficult treatment, she returned to her Steinway. Once again, music saved her. Now she brings music to prisons, retirement homes, hospitals. She recalls Laozi's words about water: useful, serving, descending rather than rising, competing with no one yet overcoming rock. This is her purpose: reaching non-musicians, revealing hidden parts of their humanity, hoping this might help them speak out when essential values are threatened. Because music, like water, flows around every obstacle and eventually wears down even the hardest stone.